Chapter 5. It was on the dreary night of November that I beheld the accomplishment of my toils. With an anxiety that almost amounted to agony, I collected the instruments of life around me that I might infuse a spark of being into the lifeless thing that lay at my feet. It was already 1 in the morning. The rain pattered dismally against the panes, my candle was nearly burnt out, when, by the glimmer of the half-extinguished light, I saw the dull yellow eye of the creature open. It breathed hard, and a convulsive motion agitated its limbs. It's alive! His yellow skin scarcely covered the work of muscles and arteries. His hair was black and flowing, forming a horrid contrast with his watery eyes, of the same color as the dun-white sockets in which they were set, his shriveled complexion and straight black lips. Now that I had finished, the beauty of the dream vanished, and horror and disgust filled my heart. I rushed out of the room. I was unable to compose my mind to sleep. I threw myself on the bed in my clothes in vain. I slept, disturbed by the wildest dreams. I thought I saw Elizabeth, in the bloom of health, walking in the streets of Ingolstadt. I embraced her, but as I imprinted the first kiss on her lips, they became livid with the hue of death. Her features changed, and I held the corpse of my dead mother in my arms. I saw the grave worms crawling in the folds of the flannel. I started from sleep in horror. A cold sweat covered my forehead, and every limb convulsed, when, by the dim yellow light of the moon, I beheld the wretch, the monster I had created. He held the curtain, his eyes fixed on me. His jaws opened, he muttered some inarticulate sounds, a grin wrinkled his cheeks. He might have spoken, but I did not hear. One hand was stretched out, I escaped, and rushed downstairs. I took refuge in the courtyard, where I remained during the rest of the night, catching and fearing each sound as if it were to announce the approach of the demoniacal corpse, to which I had so miserably given life. A mummy, endowed with animation, could not be so hideous as that wretch. When those muscles and joints were rendered capable of motion, it became a thing such as even Dante could not have conceived. Morning, dismal and wet, discovered the church of Ingolstadt. It was 6 in the morning. The porter opened the gates of the court, and I issued into the streets, as if I sought to avoid the wretch who I feared every turning would present to my view. I did not dare return to my apartment, although drenched by the rain. Frankenstein, how glad I am to see you. How fortunate you should be here, at the moment of my arrival. Nothing could equal my delight on seeing Clerval. I grasped his hand, and forgot my horror and misfortune. Clerval continued talking for some time, about our mutual friends, and his own good fortune, in being permitted to come to Ingolstadt. We ascended to my room, the servant brought breakfast. I jumped over chairs, clapped my hands, and laughed aloud. Clerval at first attributed my spirits to joy at his arrival, but as he observed me more attentively, he saw wildness in my eyes, and my loud, unrestrained, heartless laughter frightened and astonished him. Victor, what, for God's sake, is the matter? How ill you are! What is the cause of all this? I imagined that the monster seized me. I struggled furiously, and fell down in a fit. Poor Clerval! What must have been his feelings? But I was not the witness of his grief, for I was lifeless, and did not recover my senses for a long, long time. This nervous fever confined me for several months. Henry was my only nurse. He concealed my illness from the family, to spare their feelings. The form of the monster was forever before my eyes. I raved incessantly concerning him. Clerval first believed my rants to be a disturbed imagination, but he saw in time my disorder owed its origin to some uncommon and terrible event. Finally, I recovered. Clerval, how good you are to me! This whole winter has been spent in my sick room. How shall I repay you? Will you forgive me? Get well as fast as you can, and since you appear in such good spirits, I may speak to you on one subject, may I not? I trembled. One subject? What could it be? Could he allude to an object on whom I dared not even think? Your father and cousin would be very happy if they received a letter in your handwriting. They are uneasy at your long silence. Of course. A letter has been lying here some days for you. It is from your cousin, I believe.